It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Tensions between blacks and police have overflowed into a second week in the wake of the police shootings of black men in Louisiana and Minnesota and the shootings of police officers in Dallas. Today, in the midst of all of this, the hacktivist group Anonymous is calling for a nationwide day of rage with talk of protests planned for a number of cities, including Pittsburgh. Post-Gazette columnist Tony Norman joins us now by phone to talk about how things have become so tense that a conservative senator from South Carolina has broken ranks to express his concerns about policing. Tony Norman, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for inviting me, Paul. Good to be here.
You can join the conversation with a comment or question at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, the number 412-246-2002. Tony Norman, your column today concerns a conservative senator from South Carolina named Tim Scott, a Republican who has expressed his concerns about policing. Why is Tim Scott so important, and why is what he is doing so important?
Thanks for asking, Paul. Tim Scott is important because, as we all know, or many of us know, the conservative narrative about racism in America is that this is something that is overblown, that this is something that liberals and Democrats have ginned up to win elections, and that, as a matter of fact, you know, racism is a thing that is behind us for the most part, and that if only, and Bill O'Reilly is famous for saying this, Bill O'Reilly of Fox News, if only you would train your kids, that black parents would just train their kids to obey the police, there would be no problems out there, and that a lot of this is just things that are sort of self-inflicted, that if there's any racism at all, it's on the part of black people who are alleging racism. I mean, you see that in the comments section of my column and other columnists and so forth and so on, that racism is pretty much an illusion. And so what Tim Scott did, Tim Scott, who was as red a Republican as you can get, he sort of presents a counter to that narrative. He says, oh no, you know, racism is not an illusion. Racism is not something that Jesse Jackson invented or Al Sharpton is demagoguing. Racism is a reality. And let me tell you about the seven times that I was stopped just this year. And there you'll find a tale of racism that affects not only liberals, but conservatives. So I was really struck by that, and I thought I would write about his remarkable comments on the floor of the Senate this week.
And talk about some of the specifics that he went into. What is really compelling about this particular content and what you wrote about, Tony, is that this man, who has been a U.S. senator for several years now, has been subjected to really unthinkable prejudice,
right,
by police.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine, you're a U.S. senator and, you know, you're stopped from entering a federal building by someone who doesn't respect your senatorial, you know, pin on your lapel and says, hey, I recognize the authority of that pin on your lapel, but I have no idea who you are, so let's see your papers. You know, unheard of, but other, you know, senators have complained about that, black senators in the past. Or, you know, just sort of driving to your apartment complex in D.C. and just being stopped multiple times about your backlight or whatever the pretext is, or trying to go into some sort of institution. He would not clarify what it was, but Tim Scott tells the story about having two white aides and two white cops that were accompanying him to some sort of function, and the white aides were able to get in, but Tim Scott was barred from entering the premises. He won't say what it was. It was probably some private country club sort of thing. Who knows? But he was denied entry, and he's a U.S. senator. So there's something out there that gets very, very little, that's taken not seriously enough by many people. If it affects a U.S. senator enough to complain about it, it's probably a problem.
Why wasn't he complaining about it before, though, Tony? Why did it take such extremely violent events like we've seen in the last mm-hmm. couple of weeks to finally get Tim Scott to say, okay, I've had it, and I'm going to say something.
I think you know you're already tapping into it with the question. It usually he's probably embarrassed. I mean, it goes against the conservative narrative that racism. I mean, a Supreme Court, the chief of the Supreme Court, said that racism was pretty much behind us in America. So if you have a Supreme Court justice saying that, the chief of the Supreme Court, a senator is probably thinking, well, maybe it's me, until he actually opens his eyes and sees that there really is a systemic pattern to this, and that it's something that is incumbent upon him, not just as a black person, but as an American citizen, to testify to the reality of racism. That's not to say that racism is dominates the thinking of all police, but it certainly is a factor that would explain some of these stops and some of these killings that otherwise seem so inexplicable, because no one can quite figure out why people are dying because their left or right backlight is out. You know, it shouldn't. That should not be a recipe for death or the death penalty being unleashed. So there are just many mysteries in law enforcement that would be, I think, solved if we just simply and honestly acknowledge that, you know, there is an element of implicit bias that leads to a certain terror of minorities. And resulting in fatal encounters.
And how did Tim Scott's colleagues react?
They seemed to be supportive, because I think that once you're the one black senator in the Senate says something like that, it's impossible to sort of argue against his experience the way you would, let's say, argue against the experience of like a black Democrat. You know, a lot of this is partisan. If your black friend, Tim Scott, says, well, this happened to me, and this happened to me a lot, and it's sort of outrageous, you're going to take it a little more seriously, because I think there's a natural empathy for your friends. And Tim Scott is, by all accounts, a popular senator in his caucus. He's a very congenial man, very collegial, and there really is no argument, no ideological argument that can dissuade or put down his actual experience. They have to take that into consideration. I heard Paul Ryan on the radio this morning when he was asked that question, like, what do you think about Tim Scott's comments about racism? And he says, I believe him. He says, I have no choice but to believe him. He's my friend. And he's talking about things that happened to him. And that is usually the beginning of enlightenment, you know, empathy. I think that's one of the reasons that, let's say, gay marriage and the acceptance of gay people has taken on such respectability, because people start to realize that they have friends within that community, that their loved ones, that their children or parent or someone is gay, and they realize that, you know, all this propaganda that says what terrible people they are doesn't matter. It's not true, and it just takes a spark of empathy to upset the whole game. And I think that's what's happening here with Tim Scott. I think very courageous statement that yes, he can tell the same stories as any Democrat about what's happened at the hands of the police.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and my guest is Post-Gazette columnist Tony Norman. His column today talks about a South Carolina senator named Tim Scott who has broken ranks with his conservative colleagues to express his concerns about policing. And Senator Scott is African-American and has talked about numerous incidents of prejudice by police and a double standard inflicted upon him for driving anything from driving in the wrong neighborhood to having a Senate pin in his lapel and being questioned about whether he actually is a U.S. senator. And so, Tony, what does it mean that we're seeing a conservative senator like Tim Scott react this way? I mean, that there's almost, I don't know if it's an appropriate analogy or not to compare it to the thin blue line where the you know, the police oftentimes are loath to break ranks. They want to stick together. They want to show a united front. I mean, to what extent have the conservative senators, most of them Republicans, in the U.S. Senate, stuck together on this and not, you know, even if Tim Scott might have told his colleagues in the cloakroom, hey, you want to know what happened to me last night? But OK, well, I'm glad you told us. But let's not say that to the public because we want them to, you know, believe that everybody's treated equally by the police.
Right.
So now that it's out in the open, now that Tim Scott has said, you know what, I've had it. I don't like what I'm seeing. And by the way, here's what happened to me. What does his reaction mean?
Right. Time will tell, obviously, but I think it begins to open up the conversation a little bit more so that the conversation becomes a little less partisan and a little more serious, because I think that until someone like Tim Scott outs himself as a victim of racial profiling by the police, it's easy to categorize it as just, you know, another liberal boogeyman, something that, you know, partisan Democrats bring up to win elections, and that that becomes a little less compelling of an argument for, let's say, you know, a white, voter in the Midwest who may be looking at a referendum to make the police more accountable. They might have in the past said, you know, the men in blue, I mean, they're out there to protect me and, you know, they keep us all safe and so forth, and that they have, you know, there's no such thing as this sort of, you know, picking on black people just because they're black people. This causes people who might otherwise not have taken the issue seriously at all to give it a second look. And I think it also gives cover to those conservatives who actually do understand that it's a problem, but who felt that it was really important to stick, you know, with the rank and file on this, that if a man like Tim Scott, who has obvious integrity and who votes right on most of the issues that they agree with, like guns and gays, you know, he's not very, very good when it comes to, you know, gay rights or gay marriage and things like that. But if he's saying that, you know, by golly, you know, the police are sometimes out of control, how can they not take that seriously and not consider which way a vote should go? It's going to be a slow process, but, I think this is the beginning of the chipping at the facade that the police are always right. And Tim Scott in no way is demonizing the police by saying any of this stuff. He's saying, look, this is my experience. I've been stopped 7 times in 1 year over silly stuff. And I am not a bomb thrower. I am not a Jesse Jackson Democrat. You know, I am a rock-ribbed red Republican, and this happened to me. And that's far more compelling than anything that Reverend Al can say to these people.
And speaking of opening up the conversation, 412-246-2002, if you want to ask our guest, Tony Norman, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette columnist, a question, or if you have a comment pertaining to this discussion of South Carolina Senator Tim Scott and his breaking ranks with his conservative colleagues in the Senate about to express his concerns about policing. 412-246-2002, the number to call to join the conversation. Tony, do you think Tim Scott's remarks could be interpreted as supporting the Black Lives Matter movement?
That's a really interesting. I think that not so much supporting Black Lives Matter movement, you know, as a movement, but I think what it does is say that what they are talking about is not something that's ginned up or the result of some sort of liberal conspiracy, that there are grounds for people believing these things. And yes, I guess there's an implied legitimacy granted to Black Lives Matter if you're Tim Scott complaining about these same things. But I don't think that he's at all advocating the movement per se, as much as signifying that he agrees with them, at least when it comes to some matters regarding the police. Because that is basically a universal Black experience. You're very few of your listeners or your colleagues who are African-American, at least, will say that this is not a problem. In fact, I dare say that you're not going to find any Black people in media or politics who say that this is not a problem. There may be occasional cranks, and I was actually on a radio show of a Black preacher from the South a year or two ago who did argue this, as a matter of fact. But, he's so extreme that I was convinced at the end of the interview that he was putting me on, and that, you know, he would say anything to keep his ratings up there in the South, and that he was just being a provocateur. But, I mean, most reasonable Black people can tell you stories about being stopped either in their car or foot, and will tell you uncomfortable stories. I was stopped by the cops just 3 weeks ago, and nothing came of it, but it was annoying, and I didn't think anything of it. It just becomes so routine, and I wasn't given a ticket or anything, but the guy was exercising his power, and and I understand that, and I got home alive, and that's all I want. I just want to live at the end of these encounters.
Yeah, that's about pretty much about all anybody wants to do, especially in light of what we're seeing.
Right.
You asked the question in your column, how does the Republican narrative that racism ended in the 60s with President Obama's election square with his experience, meaning Tim Scott's experience?
Right.
And so we know how that question has been answered in the past. But I want to ask you about how that question might be answered now going forward. But before I do that, Tony, we have a number of people who want to get in on this conversation. So we're going to start with Marion in the North Hills, and then we'll get to our other callers who are waiting on the line. Marion, welcome. You have a question for Tony Norman. Go ahead.
Thank you, Paul. Hi, Tony.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for this information. My question is really regarding the definition of racism. As a white person, when I hear the word racism, I think of hatred toward a race of people different from my race. But is it just that when I'm in a neighborhood different from my neighborhood, and there are a group of African-American teenagers, sometimes I feel differently. I might fear faster than if they were a group of white teenagers. Is that racism? Do we need to expand the narrative so of what the definition of racism is so that we can fight it on an individual level? Your comments, please.
Great question, Marion.
Yeah, I think that, I understand the concern about the term racism, because it's very hard-edged, and it seems to, it's such a negative connotation, and as it should be. What I would say about your feelings, and you're in a neighborhood that you feel uncomfortable, that there are kids who look like they might be a threat to you, I wouldn't say it was racist as much as it was sort of a perception based upon many years of propaganda, of stories that you've heard about how you should automatically fear these folks. And 9 times out of 10, maybe 10 times out of 10, nothing happens. Nothing happens. I mean, and your fear, your fear begins to dissipate at a certain point. The more contact you have with the people that you fear, the better it becomes. Yes, I think we all have bigotries and racist feelings about any number of things. It doesn't necessarily define us. Like, I wouldn't say, oh, you're a racist because you have this concern because you've been dumped in the middle of, let's say, the Hill District that night, and you see a bunch of guys on the corner. You should be wary. Everyone should be wary in a situation that they're not used to. I mean, that's just part of being a human being. But if you act on that feeling to the point that you would not hire people because they live in that neighborhood or they come from that neighborhood or whatever, if you're acting out so like these sort of racist presuppositions, then it becomes a problem. But until you actually know people and, you know, they're a part of your life, it's probably natural to have some aversion until you realize that there's nothing to fear.
We have time for one more call. Let's go to David in Pittsburgh. Sorry we couldn't get to everybody here, but we're running tight on time. David, you have a question. Go ahead, please.
Well, it's not so much a question as it is a comment. And the comment is this. We continue to talk about these incidents, and these incidents continue to happen. And what we're really talking about is the effect, not the cause. The cause is our psychology. Racism, prejudice, is really, in fact, a defense mechanism. Let me give you an example. Suppose, and I suspect this has happened to almost everyone, you're in a room with someone who is obviously very, very angry and very upset. And everybody else in the room can see that that person is angry and upset, except for the person who is angry and upset. And that's because that person's defenses not only are generating the anger, but are also preventing the person from seeing that he or she is upset. Well, that's the way it is with racism. Racism is a defense mechanism. The people who manifest it have an extremely difficult time seeing it. But to those who are affected by it, it is much easier to see it. And so Black people, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, he's just agreeing with you. Go ahead, David. We need to wrap up, but just please finish your point quickly if you can.
Okay. Well, the point is just simply that white people, a great many white people, have a strong investment in maintaining their identity as white people. Part of that identity is that I am different from and therefore better than Black people. That's a defense, and they can't see it.
David,
that's fascinating. Yeah,
David,
yeah.
Thank you for that. Tony, we have to wrap this up. So very quickly, how is the question of that you ask in your column? How does the Republican narrative that racism ended in the '60s with President Obama's election square with his experience in the wake of what you've written about Tim Scott and him expressing his experiences? How might that be answered differently in about 15 seconds here?
Boy, I don't know. I think that. Tim Scott's experience just opens up the narrative to go to a deeper level. So we can no longer be innocent anymore. We have to understand that the narrative has changed. Racism is still with us.
Tony Norman of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, great column today. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for inviting me.
Coming up, writers, musicians, and performers convene this weekend to celebrate creative expression at Wilkinsburg Dream City Art. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.